Rise and shine, football fans. Start your day the right way with Morning Footy, a podcast that covers every aspect of the global game, headlines, match previews, analysis, interviews, culture, fashion, and plenty of banter. Join as we track the thrills and spills of Europe's biggest title races, the business end of the Champions League season, a summer packed with international competitions, MLS, NWSL, and much more. Subscribe to Morning Footy.
You're listening to Comedy Central.
My guest tonight is one of the greatest tennis players and one of the greatest athletes of all time. He is a 20-time Grand Slam champion. He's also a philanthropist, an entrepreneur, and one of the classiest people you will ever meet. Please welcome Roger Federer. Roger Federer himself.
Nice to see you.
Welcome to The Daily Show.
Thank you.
It is so good to have you here because, I mean, you have, for over two decades now, in many ways, defined a sport. You've defined how people see it. You've defined how people try and play it. You are a move. I don't know if you ever think about how amazing that is. When people will say, they'll be like, oh, I'm doing a Federer backhand. You know what I mean? You've transcended the sports as well, because tennis for many people is just this thing that happens somewhere, and who plays it and how do they play it. You've become larger than life, and now it has all come to an end. Before we talk about the end, let's talk about what it was. When you look back, I want to talk about that. When you look back, did you know from the beginning? Did you have an inkling? Did you look in the mirror and go like, oh, I'm going to switch this shit up?
No, I did not know it was going to turn out this good. In Switzerland, we don't dream this big, you know. We hope to be good, but not great. And in sports, it's probably skiing, and there's a bit of football, a bit of ice hockey and all that stuff. And then tennis was coming up, and thankfully, we had an Olympic champion, Marc Rosset, in 92. He won the Olympics in tennis. And then we had Martina Hingis, who also won the US Open at Wimbledon.
Right.
And they paved the way for me a little bit to show me that it was possible. And then, people were saying I could be the next Pete Sampras and I was talented and all that stuff, but you feel like they always say that, you know, at some point. And I never thought I was going to have this great of a career. So I couldn't be more excited, more happy, more proud of everything. And unfortunately, it has come to an end, but it's been great.
It really has been great. Yeah. It's been amazing. It truly has. You know, you talk about Pete Sampras, and I think about somebody like Pete who is a legend in the sport, you know, who defined so many aspects of the game. And he held the record for a very long time. And then you come into the sport, you eclipse his record in, what, 6 years it takes you? And, you know, and Pete would talk about how, you know, that he got sort of tired of the sport and, you know, he was a champion. But you had this drive and this class about you that nobody understood. You're a multi-generational talent as well, because the class that you came in with retired before you. The next class played with you and you were still the champion. And now the class that is there now still goes, Roger Federer is one of the best competitors we've ever played against. You know, what do you think? I would love to know how you found that drive. How did you keep on going? What inspired you, even when you had won it all?
It's a good question. And, you know, when I was growing up, I had Michael Schumacher that I would look up to, who was at the top for so long. Tiger Woods, same thing. And I always thought it's impossible to do that, you know, to stay at the top for so long and have that drive. Now people ask me, how did you do it? And I'm like, well, it's normal. You just go out there, you do it again, and you try to win and again, and it's fun. And so you keep doing it. And everybody else would like to be in your shoes, right?
Yes,
and
yes.
And then you also have a duty to, in my mind, to represent the sport well and enjoy it while it lasts. And I really felt like I squeezed out that lemon till the last drop, and I tried my very best in the end. And it was incredible. And I needed the likes of Pete Sampras, you know, to also show me how it is at the top. And it's tough, you know, but I feel like I had a lot of fun on the tour. It was not just about tennis. It was also going to nice dinners with friends, and I'm happy that I didn't take tennis almost that serious or that professional. Still had that bit of an amateur twist to it. I'm a bit worried that every sport is going into such a professional direction, which I hope we don't lose the fun in it.
I'd love to know, that's one of the biggest things that has struck me about you in meeting you as a human being, and many people will say this about you.
You'll meet many athletes who have dominated a sport. The sport is their life. It doesn't feel like that for you. It feels like the sport is a huge part of your life, but right. Roger Federer is still Roger Federer. You know, you're down to earth, you have fun, you meet people, you have conversations, you're living the life and you're enjoying what the life comes with in the sport. It inspires you in a different way. Do you feel like the whole sport has changed in that way? It has become like really meticulous and analytical?
Yeah, more so, more analytics in the game. Sports science is also coming in hard. It's okay. It's important, you know, and when you see somebody else doing something that works, well, you gotta kind of do it too, or at least try it, and then you go, you follow them, you know, and I did some of it for other players or for a lot of them, and now others are showing it how it's done, you know, and of course, we live in a very statistic-based world. Right, you know, we love our statistics, and we love breaking records and who's the greatest and all that stuff. So you come out, you just won a Grand Slam or you're just world number one, and the first question is, so how long you want to stay world number one? Like, when are you going to win the next Grand Slam? Right, like, what's your next win, instead of actually enjoying it? And it's a bit of a problem, I think. Instead of enjoying it, we have to move on too quickly. Mm-hmm. And one Wimbledon victory would have been plenty for me, and ended up going on and winning several, but it was...
several
it was
indeed.
Good.
Several indeed.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss, 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
When people regard an athlete as the greatest of all time, oftentimes they're only referring to what the athlete has done, you know, in the field of play, on the court, you know, on the racetrack, whatever it may be. Every single human being who, even if they don't know you personally, says Roger Federer is the greatest of all time, not just because of what he achieved in terms of numbers, but how he defined the sport. For instance, you had the record for a very long time, 20 Grand Slams, you know? Then Rafa comes along and beats that with 21. Then Novak comes along and beats that with 22. And yet, when you talk to them, they say Roger Federer is who we're aspiring to, and he defines how we're trying to play. So I'd love to know, you know, is it a little bit irritating that they're using you to beat your record? Or does it strike you that these are your greatest competitors saying, yeah, but you're still the pinnacle of what we're trying to be?
No. Look, I feel very lucky to be that guy. And I know I've been since they come on tour, I've been there. So I think it's a great moment for them, you know, to now show who they are without that Federer halo effect, me being around.
Right.
And especially younger generation, they were not allowed to say, I want to win the US Open, because they were told, oh, you can't say that because, you know, Novak and Rafa and Roger, we're all playing. So they are the ones that can say that. You're not allowed to say that. But I think, you know, the end was very emotional. And to be actually on such a great friendship, really, with the guys at the very end of my career, after everything that we've gone through, brutal matches, great wins, tough losses.
Yes.
And at the end, always having this camaraderie is amazing. I mean, maybe just a little anecdote, because maybe people don't know, but we share the same locker room, we share the same restaurants, we usually get put in the same hotels, so we see each other all the time, and we even practice together, you know. And
you see, that's something I think a lot of people don't know. And when I found that out, it was one of the strangest ideas I had to wrap my head around. I don't think there are many sports where the greatest rivals practice with each other. I always go, like, you know, I think of like kung fu movies as a kid. I don't want you to know my secrets. I don't want you to know my tricks. And yet you would hit with each other.
That's why I ended up not practicing very much with Novak and Rafa anymore.
Okay, that makes sense.
Not so much with those guys.
Right, but you'd play with Stan, for instance.
A lot of guys, Stan Wawrinka, my guy.
And there's a camaraderie that you achieve. For instance, many were shocked, especially people who don't watch tennis, to see when you were saying goodbye to the sport. So many people were sad, because I think for many, myself included, we felt like we were robbed of, you know, the last few years. COVID robbed us of so much in our personal lives,
definitely.
You know, in societal lives, but then also in moments like this, we got robbed of 2 years of Roger Federer playing the game. You know, it felt like your retirement came so early. And when you did say goodbye, not to us, it did. It just, like, you know.
Not for me.
Your knees are telling a different story.
I was hanging on.
but then, you know, there's that amazing video of the players saying goodbye to you.
Yeah.
And it's this clip of you and Rafael Nadal crying.
We're all crying.
You are crying. You are in tears. You're bawling together.
Yeah.
And that was a special moment.
You know,
for you.
I really think, I mean, this is a very unusual situation for us to be on the same team, number one. And so I think that changed the whole dynamics of my farewell, if you want. Then my hope was I could play doubles with Rafa. So I called him up after the US Open. And it was a very emotional phone call, actually, because it was one of the first times I told somebody outside of my team and family, and I had to call him up and tell him, hey, Rafa, just before you make any other plans, I would love you to be at the Laver Cup and play maybe one last doubles with me. It would be amazing, because unfortunately my knee is not so good anymore, and I think it's the end, you know. And he's like, oh yeah, oh my god, okay, yeah, I'll be there, whatever it takes. I just he's now become a father. I'm so happy for him.
Congratulations to him. Yeah.
And We were not sure if he was going to make it, you know, because of the baby. So it was one of the first times I had to tell that story and come to terms, like, the career is ending. So when he showed up and Novak was there and Murray was there and Bjorn Borg was there and everybody was there, it was an amazing moment. And then I knew it was going to be incredibly emotional. I've always cried a lot in victory and in defeat when I was younger. And I don't know why, but I do it. But I'm happy because I remember those moments even more so because of it. And then when it was all over and I had to take the mic, I knew it was going to be terrible for me, but I felt like I did actually pretty good.
I think you did.
And I was so happy I was able to be there in tennis clothes and not like this, because that was my vision. It was going to be a horror show, you know, for me to be there with the mic in front of in the light and tell everybody, you know, this is it.
It was home.
It was amazing to do it in London too, where I had so much success. And Laver Cup was beautiful, and Rafa there holding my hand briefly. People thought it was, or I held his hand actually.
But hands were held. It doesn't matter.
It was amazing. Honestly.
You know, you're going to have, and you will always be synonymous with the sport. As I said, you cannot separate Roger Federer from the sport itself now. And yet, I was shocked to hear a story, which I don't know if it was true or not. You know, I was like, Roger Federer, everyone in tennis, you cannot, the name is synonymous with the sport, you cannot, Roger. And then someone was like, well, you know, Roger couldn't get into Wimbledon recently. I was like, wait, that's not possible. Is Roger Federer, is this a true, is there even a semblance of truth to you?
Yeah.
Wait, no, I need to understand, what happened?
It was actually 2 weeks ago. So I was in Tokyo for my sponsor, Uniqlo, and I came back to Wimbledon, actually to London, to come see a doctor for having a second opinion on my knee, because my knee has been not great lately. And then I didn't want to tell Wimbledon that I was going to maybe be there, and I didn't know if I was going to have time to go by the club because I was going to fly home to the family. So doctor appointment was done, look on the watch, okay, we got 2 hours to kill, so what are we going to do? Do we head to the airport, or let's quickly go have tea at Wimbledon?
Of course.
So I'm like, let's go. But I have not really been at Wimbledon when the tournament is not on. So, okay, so I drive up to the gate where usually guests come in, where, let's say, you would arrive,
you
go up. And so I get out, I tell my coach, who was with me at the time, Severin, I tell him, I quickly go out and speak to the security lady, you know, I got this, you know, and then I did not. So then I get out and I'm like, yes, hello. I'm just was wondering how I can get into Wimbledon. You know, where's the door? Where's the gate? And she's, yeah, do you have a membership card? I'm like, we have one. Because when you win Wimbledon, you become a member automatically.
Okay.
Yes, and I honestly, I don't know about membership cards. They're probably at home somewhere. And I've just been traveling, so I had no idea. So I'm like, no, I don't have my membership card, but I am a member. I'm just wondering where I can get in. And she's, yeah, but you have to be a member. So I'm like, okay, this is going to be difficult here, this one. So I'm like, no, I am a member. And normally I am here. So I have to start again, right? So I tell her, normally when I'm here, I'm playing. And there's loads of people, and I come in a different way, and now it's the first time I'm not here, Well, the tournament's not on, and I don't know where to get in, so I'm just asking you again, where can I get in? She's like, well, at the site, but you have to be a member. So I look at her one last time, and I'm in a panic now, and I'm so sorry, and I still can't believe I say that, because I still feel bad about it, and I'd look at her and say, I have won this tournament 8 times. Please, believe me, I am a member, and where do I get in? So I'm like, okay. Oh, it was, so I get back in the car, my coach is like, oh, all good, where do we get in? I'm like, don't talk. So I'm like, let's go up and around the gate.
It's so
like
she doesn't let you in?
No. So
oh, wow, okay.
So then I go out and I go around on the other side. So I get out of the car and random person walks, on the, walkway.
Yeah.
And said, oh, Mr. Federer, my God, I can't believe you're here at Wimbledon. Like, can we take a selfie? I'm like, yes, let's take a picture. And the security guards that are there, they're like, oh my God, Mr. Federer, what are you doing here? Do you have your membership card? I'm like, no, I don't. But is it possible to get in? Of course, we'll open the door. Let me organize it. And I walk in, and the chairman was there and everybody. And then I was having tea for an hour. And I thought of going over to the other side and giving a wave that I was in. But I didn't do it.
You would never do that.
But it was...
You would never do that.
It was terrible.
You would never do that. You see? That's what I mean. That's the Roger Federer.
When I said I won Wimbledon 8 times, for a split second, I wasn't sure if it was 8 anymore. Because I thought it was 7. Was it 8? I don't know. But I said it because I'd never talk like this. So
yeah. You know what? I love that both of you were in that situation. Because on your side, you never talk like that. You're never that person. Mm-hmm. I've been with you in places where somebody, for some reason, doesn't recognize you. And you don't respond as if they should recognize you. No, you're not that person.
Exactly.
But on her side, I believe she deserves a raise. She was gangster about it.
She was doing it.
Yeah. She's like, where's your membership card, sir?
Because, I mean, you know how it goes sometimes.
Hey, man,
they do their job.
Anyone could look like Roger Federer.
Absolutely.
I don't know if you're Roger. Where's the membership card, buddy?
Where is your name? Where's your picture? You don't have it. I'm sorry.
I like that.
Yeah,
I like
it was
that
good.
A lot.
It was good.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
What I've enjoyed about knowing you is we have so many things in common. You may not know this as an audience, but like Roger and I, we have many things in common. We both are half Swiss, half South African.
That's right.
Yeah, we both half Swiss, half South African. We both speak multiple languages. We both played at the record holding.
We both play tennis.
Right, we both play tennis. We do. I think it's the world record for the highest attendance for a tennis match. We might still hold it. Yeah.
I mean, I played for 20 plus years, right? But to break the record.
You know,
I needed you.
You needed help.
Yes, I needed help.
I don't think it would have happened without me. You know,
Definitely we
have between us 20 Grand Slam titles. It's crazy. And, you know, in many ways, you know, we're both moving on to something different. And I'd love to know from your side, as an athlete who's defined yourself as something for so long, and the people have defined you as one thing for so long, you've talked about how hard the idea of moving on has been, the idea of what you will do when tennis isn't your life. But I've noticed that you've almost seamlessly slid into everything. You know, your clothing is everywhere. Your shoes, you know, like one of my camera guys on the team, Tim, he was telling me, he's like, these are like walking on clouds.
You know what I
mean? No, but you've done everything exceptionally. Your philanthropy, all of the work you've done to help education in Africa. Roger Federer has excelled everything in life. What are you most excited about that won't be tennis related?
You know, I feel a little bad at the moment because, I mean, it's been super easy transition so far. I feel really good. I mean, I might fall off the cliff tomorrow, who knows, but I feel really good. And, The thing is, I've told a lot of people who had so many requests, you know, while I was still playing, like, well, reach out to me when I'm retired.
Yes.
So they have.
They've now.
Reached out now. And so now we've had to say no in a thousand different messages, mm-hmm. ways. Mm-hmm. You know, unfortunately, no, still not, you know.
Yes.
So I feel bad about saying no, but I think I have to take the time to make the next move. I'm anyway still very busy. I mean, I have four children and they mean everything to me.
Two sets of twins.
Twin boys that are 8 and twin girls that are 13. So that needs to be my priority with my wonderful wife, Mirka, and we...
That's right, she deserves a chair.
She does.
Mirka's amazing if you've met
She's
her.
Been
she really
with
is.
Me every step of the way. So, I mean, I'm really looking forward to what's next. I mean, like you said, I have my philanthropy, I have my partners, my sponsors, I have my business, and it's going super well. And I don't know, I want to see how I maybe stay involved in tennis in some shape or form.
Yeah.
I'm not sure yet how it's going to go because there's not that many jobs, if you want, in tennis,
yes.
like in maybe in soccer or in golf. I feel like they have many more.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, they do.
Yeah, we are either a coach or a commentator,
that's
right?
It. It's a very solitary sport, very small. Yeah.
So I'll have to see, but I will always be open to mentor kids and do all that stuff.
There is one thing that you're doing exceptionally right now, and that is being an ambassador for Swiss tourism. I don't know if you've seen the ads. They're really amazing. No, they really are. Mm-hmm. There's some of the funniest ads. You know, you did one with Anne Hathaway that was pretty amazing.
We did.
The role of Robert De Niro was one of my favorites.
Okay,
you know?
Thank you.
But I was intrigued by this because I came to Switzerland for the first time on my comedy tour.
Right.
You were gracious. Roger reached out, which this is the kind of person this man is. This is Roger Federer, the greatest, you know, tennis player who's ever lived, one of the greatest athletes of all time. And I get a call when I'm in Switzerland. He goes, I know you're here. Would you like to go for lunch maybe and talk about Switzerland, or can I show you around, or can I? I'm like, can you? Like, it's so gracious and it's so unassuming. I would expect you to be like, I know you're here, you're going with me, but no, Roger Federer's like, if you would like, maybe I can, you know.
It was great to see you.
It was amazing.
And your show was unbelievable.
And you're one of the best tour guides of Swiss tourism. No, I learned from you. I put stuff in the show. And so I'd love to know,
those ads were nerve-wracking because, you know, the good thing with the Robert De Niro one is that, I mean, number one, I can't believe he actually did it, which in itself was a victory. I mean, I'm a huge fan. And then he shot his first, was during COVID, and was on a call together, you know,
on a
video call.
So
he had done his before. And then I could just act on what he did.
Yes,
so, and I obviously could do 100 takes if I had to, and it was no pressure, and he wasn't around. So, but I agree, it was actually very creative, and it was a good piece, especially his side. Me, I'm not the best. But then, Anne Hathaway, on the other hand, she was sitting next to me when I was doing the ad. And
was that stressful?
Yes, that was very stressful. Because I hadn't, the script had changed a lot of the times, and then I gave up because I knew Anne was doing her magic. And when I showed up, the director said, I usually shoot in one piece. I'm like, what do you mean in one piece? Like the
just
whole
like,
thing?
Yeah, one take, the
and
whole thing.
And then it goes like an action, and literally I had no idea about any of the lines. So they created all these teleprompters for me so I could read off them, and then the camera would be moving in front of the teleprompter, and I'd be chasing the text. Anyway, I got better over time, and then Anne was super sweet. She couldn't have been nicer to me, and then she tells me at one point towards the end, she's like, you know, Roger, you have improved so much during the shoot, and you're doing so good. You're improvising incredibly well. And I look at her, I was like, you don't have to tell me this. I don't need to be an actor. I'm not a good actor. And I need you to come home and just say, you know what, Swiss tourism, this was a fun ad. You had a great time. And you don't need to tell me I'm doing well.
Right.
It just needs to be good for you. I'm fine. Don't worry. I can be terrible. And I'm okay with
but
it.
But you
too.
Were terrible. You were great. You're a great ambassador for Switzerland. You're a great ambassador for the sport of tennis.
Thank
and
you.
Honestly, you're a great ambassador for human beings. Thank you for everything
you've
done.
Thank you very much. It's been a
pleasure. We appreciate you so much.
Thank you for taking the time to be here.
Every single person who loves you for a reason. Roger Federer, everybody.
Explore more shows from the Daily Show podcast universe by searching The Daily Show wherever you get your podcasts. Watch The Daily Show weeknights at 11, 10 Central on Comedy Central, and stream full episodes anytime on Paramount Plus.
This has been a Comedy Central podcast.
Rise and shine, football fans. Start your day the right way with Morning Footy, a podcast that covers every aspect of the global game. Headlines, match previews, analysis, interviews, culture, fashion, and plenty of banter. Join as we track the thrills and spills of Europe's biggest title races, the business end of the Champions League season, a summer packed with international competitions, MLS, NWSL, and much more. Subscribe to Morning Footy.